Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is March 6th, day after Cinco de Mayo. Was it a single? I actually went and got tacos yesterday for the spot up here on 185th Street.
Of course.
It was surprisingly light. There was nobody in there. I was shocked it was going to be rammed.
I mean, I don't know if Washington Heights be going in that hard for Taco Tuesday.
No. They don't. It's definitely not. They don't. You know, there's a couple of Mexican spots up here, but it ain't, you know, this ain't that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This ain't the east side and all that where it probably was lit. I know. Kelly KMG, GZ Kel, she put a clip online of this Mexican restaurant in Harlem that I used to go to a lot too before this happened, and she said it was a 3-hour wait to get her food.
Jesus.
3 hours, and yeah, because I guess they would go. Yeah, I'm not doing 3 hours.
Not that serious at all.
Nothing. There's nothing. I'm waiting 3 hours for it, nigga.
She said it took 3 hours to get her food, and I guess they got the drinks to go.
Mama. I literally would have been at home cooking. Like, there's no way. There's
3 hours, nigga? 3 hours?
3 hours, my nigga. 3 hours. That's what she said. You know, she took a video and, you know, it was a bunch of people standing outside.
I saw the video.
I like that spot, too. They got some good food there, but yeah, I wouldn't
have been. I've been there. And it's great.
Was it Cantina, the spot down the steps that has all the tacos?
No. This is Lolita. There's the Mexican spot next to Black Ink.
Oh, okay.
They opened up another one, a nicer one, like a 119th in Lenox. It's like nicer and stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure Cantina and all that shit was packed too. But I ain't doing the three. I ain't doing the three. I can't do the three. Sidebar, just on the food thing, I was just looking online. There was a thing, one of them little investigative reporting things showing how the Uber, because I've been seeing a lot of people online complain about DoorDash and Grubhub, the ones that, like, they ain't getting their food or they getting food late. And then I saw something online today where, like, they filming the drivers. Drivers is digging the niggas' food, eating their fries on the way to the delivery, drinking people's soda on the way to dropping your shit off. I don't have any of those apps on my phone. I don't fucking
know. There seems to be. I use Grubhub because the delivery people for Grubhub are sometimes from Grubhub. Just facilitates the transaction. The people actually are still from the restaurant, but Uber Eats. It's an Uber driver.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
They seem to have very little regulation because I hear a lot of stories about food getting jacked.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it doesn't really give you real recourse.
I use Uber Eats, but to be honest, I use Uber Eats in a family capacity. So I'm ordering so much food that the way it comes packaged to me, it's not really like
You ain't ordering a burger and fries.
Yes, like I'm not ordering that from Five Guys where this nigga's just digging his hand in an unsealed bag.
Literally.
Like, I might order from Cuban Pete's, or I might order from, you know, maybe a mid-level or high-end Chinese spot.
Yeah, what's wrapped up.
Everything is wrapped up. Stapled to the nines.
Yeah.
You know, and honestly, too, man, like, I put one of the things I've done, because I found this out in California, is I put my tip in before they pick up the order.
Okay.
Like, I put all of that in because I want my order.
So it incentivizes them to, like,
So you know you're going to go get this order, drop it off, you got $10, $12, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Whatever I decide that tip to be is already in there versus, because ultimately what we're doing is we're telling a person to make a choice. Do I go and take this incredibly small order, which in a best case scenario, I'm getting a $2 tip if I get that.
If I get that.
Or, you know what I'm saying, do I sit around and kind of wait for those big $100 orders from the Thai place or from the Chinese spot? Or, you know, when I order
like
from a spot.
Four pizzas or something like that.
Exactly. And honestly, any good pizza in the Northeast has delivery kids.
True.
So you should never be ordering from, you know, any place that does, you know, any pizzeria anyway. But my point is like, it's always good to incentivize people. It's like any other thing, right? Yeah. Like, yo, he knows he can come here, drop my shit off at the door. He ain't got to see me. He ain't got to do a song and dance for me.
Right.
$14 tip.
Yeah, and I'm out.
I'm out. I'm on to the next thing.
Yeah. So I've been seeing that. Like, I saw we actually talking yesterday. I forget. We talk on Twitter sometimes. Brown Bella, I think is her name, but if I'm mistaken, I'm sorry. But she was saying that, you know, she ordered a big order and it just never showed up, and she couldn't get in touch with the driver. Customer service wasn't taking no calls. That was DoorDash, I think. And I saw also Drea about 2 weeks ago put in a massive order. I forget where it was from, but to send to a hospital for like the workers.
Never got there.
It never showed up. Wow. And so she. You know, Instagram lied to herself saying like what she did and like, you know, don't do that and how fucked up it is. It was like a big ass order. It was like, you know, to feed like, you know, all the work, like all the workers that had
the
like
workers.
Overnight. Yeah, it was like 50, 75, you know.
This is also why it's good to, one of the things I use the Uber Eats for and I use those apps for are for places that are two things. One, they're local.
Okay.
They're not chains.
Yeah, okay.
Right. Like, I can go
so you say
there.
Don't do chains.
I don't fuck with no chains with that.
Okay.
You know, mostly because most chains have a drive-thru. It's just really not that deep for me to board. Like, I'm not spending $17 for number two.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just not.
Yeah,
like, There's no level of convenience that would make me feel good about eating a hamburger that cost me that much, right?
I'm never
going to do that. But that's one of the things I do, man, is, like, I make sure that I fuck with local businesses.
Okay.
That I know, so that way if shit goes left,
not only can
I go down there, but they know me.
So they can fix it. If something happens, they're going to fix it.
And I patronize places that I go to frequently.
Yeah. So they're going to know you. They're going to be like, oh, you fuck this. Nah.
That's so-and-so. They know you.
Yeah. You go to that place all the time. Take this on the house or whatever, you know?
I think what surprises me about the people stealing food is that it would... I know that for Uber, they are quick to suspend drivers if you file a complaint. So I would assume that if a customer says you stole their shit, that's the end of your...
Yeah, you're jammed up. Yeah.
So it's like, how are you calculating that risk? Like, I'm going to steal this one meal versus I'm going to keep this as an opportunity for me to keep
making some paper.
But this is interesting. Actually goes into other things, which is you have an abundance of people who are Uber drivers who operate in Uber Eats. This is their second and then sometimes third, and sometimes other cases, their third jobs.
Right.
These are not drivers by profession. These are niggas with cars.
Niggas
with cars and good gas mileage, right?
Yeah.
Which is why you always get a fucking Corolla, fucking Camry.
But
that's you know, part of it, right? Like, is because Uber has this abundance of people, you know, that come in, apply, people are looking for work. We know Uber Eats is something where, you know, the capacity is, you know, being used now, right? Like, everyone's at home, everyone's trying to use it, there's a demand for it. So there's anytime there's a high demand, there's going to be less and less regulations.
The quality
of the people that's coming in is going to be less and less. And, you know, niggas don't think you're going to notice four fries missing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I took six fries, nigga, whatever. I took a sip of your Sprite, and you didn't even notice that shit. You know what I'm saying? I put a new straw in.
But see, they need to know who they're delivering to, because white folks may not notice. Black people?
Yeah.
Gonna be
fries is light.
These fries are super light. We know. There's a nugget missing out this motherfucker.
Exactly.
We gonna
keep
that shit.
Yeah. So, also, since we're in the food thing real quick, I did want to mention just possible, I guess. And you, I think you mentioned this a couple weeks ago, bro. We did it on the show. We were just talking about this apparent meat shortage that is kind of pending. I don't. It seems like it's beef and pork that's affected as of now.
All of the meat in the country comes through like a total like 10 to 12 plants.
Or yes. Yeah. Exactly. It's a mere monopoly on like the meat that goes through.
Right. So in a lot of the plants, like I want to say it was one plant. I can't remember if it was Tyson or what, that were like 95% of the workforce tested positive or some crazy shit.
I think that was Tyson.
Allegedly,
because I don't want to say.
Allegedly. But I've read two different sets of reports. I've read one that says that there may be a supply chain shortage on the way, but I've read another one that says that these plants usually have enough. This might not be a positive thing, but they usually have enough in cold storage so that it would be quite some time before we actually saw that impacted on our grocery store shelves. My concern definitely was also about, like, does this mean that the meat that's hitting stores is contaminated?
So many of these workers, I've been watching Rachel Maddow a little bit. I don't watch the news anywhere that much at all anymore because it's so brutal. But I watched Rachel a little bit, and the past few nights, she's been kind of focusing on the not the meat shortage some, but more. And the biggest story for her is how, like you just said, how many workers in these plants are contaminated because obviously it's a small, small areas, and that there's no, they're not regulating them. They're like, oh, they're contaminated, but fuck it, they got to keep working anyway. Okay. So, and then she keeps talking about meat plants, prisons, I guess hospitals, and there's one other thing. There's like four main kind of things where there's so many people. Oh, jail. Did I say prisons? No, I didn't say prisons. Yeah, jail. So she's saying like how, and then obviously these people go out into the community once they leave work, all contaminated, and it's meanwhile the contamination is just kind of going in a circle in these places. The meat plants being one of them. So now does the food hold the virus, or do we even know that?
So I've read studies that says that there's not yet any signs that food can hold or transmit the virus. But then again, you know, they've said a lot of things about what the virus can and can't do that have changed over time.
Yeah, because viruses mutate. Maybe it couldn't
before. I think one of the things we have to all be conscious of is when we get any of this information, we have to process it through a right now lens,
and not through
such an absolute lens. Yeah. Like, this is what we know right now. That may change in 72 hours. And it's not that anyone lied or anyone did. There's no big conspiracy here, but there's still being studies done. And, you know, and listen, I would be very hard pressed to think that not only can it survive in food, but that it would survive on food, through the transportation,
the packaging process, and
cooking it, right? Like,
the process of
cooking, washing,
because or the meat being frozen. Or the meat being frozen.
I hope you niggas are washing your chicken.
Right.
Oh my God. Yeah, that debate is definitely over now.
I would like to think you niggas have come around to us.
Yeah, exactly.
And started washing your chicken.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, the one thing that really does bother me about this is that, and it's not all, but, you know, vegetarians and vegans can be so fucking smug.
Oh, my God. Like,
celebrating the foods, which is ridiculous. Like, you're celebrating the fact that plants full of people are sick, you know, which is crazy. But also, like, that, again, it really does, like, I'm not necessarily planning on going, I don't eat meat every day anyway, but I'm not necessarily planning on, like, going vegetarian all of a sudden because this is happening, right?
Yeah, like, I don't eat beef anyway, so that I don't have the issue. But yeah, I'm gonna eat my chicken.
I'm not gonna eat chicken right now. Yeah. Until somebody tells me
otherwise. And every couple Sundays, I might have me a couple pieces of bacon. What are we talking about?
Oh, bacon is a staple in my
mouth. Yeah, I mean, I'm eating regular,
and not the turkey bacon. Real shit.
It's not going. Yeah, it's not going to fuck me up if we needed to go a week or two without having chicken. Like, it's not the end of the world. I'm not plenty of dishes.
You ain't gonna get your gun and go protest down to the governor's office. I need my chicken.
Nah, definitely they gonna get me on no turnpike with no pistol.
Right.
No
I'm going to Phil Murphy's and talk about my, I need my chicken.
Nah, I'm good. But I will say the supermarket still has regulatory practices in place. So even after the immediate scarcity of food and toilet paper and all of that sort of shit, what they've kept in place was not just the social distancing, but the regulation of what you can purchase. So you can't, it's not like,
you can't go in there and like wipe and get and like
wipe the them out.
Yeah, wipe them out. Yeah, exactly.
None of that. Yo, because I only had I think I had maybe like 4 packs of chicken, which for my house, I mean, it's 4 people eating every day now, right? Yeah. So that's really not a lot of food. And I'm trying to avoid going more and more to supermarket. And the lady's like, yo, you got to pick 2. Wow. I had to pick like, yeah, she was like, yo, you can only get 2.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was like, I thought it was like 2 per brand.
She was like, nah, it's two per person.
And nigga, so I'm sitting there at the register counting the chicken pieces. All right, I got 5 in this pack. I got 9 in this other pack.
I got 9 over here. Yeah. You gotta call Julio, slip him $5 and say, yo, buy them, I'm gonna give the money for this chicken.
I just hit, but you know what? I know where all the cuts and grooves are, and you know where I live, so I can go find places to go. Supplement that.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I just wanted to bring that up, man. Couple of quick music things. I know y'all niggas don't care, but we didn't mention the Drake album. Just the Drake mixtape he dropped last week.
Yeah, definitely don't care.
Yeah, I know y'all niggas don't care about that.
So y'all niggas done got the fucking Tussie Slide to number fucking 1.
Number 1, and there's, of course, and his album is going number 1 this week. Well, mixtape. It's not an album. It's kind of like a bunch of Lucy's. Of course, I enjoyed it, but I know you niggas don't care.
I mean,
Drake is good for what Drake is, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not... And listen, is it the worst thing I've ever heard in the world? No. Is it groundbreaking?
No, it's not groundbreaking.
You know, I mean, it's just, it's kind of a little routine, and I know we don't process him as an old nigga, but he's really, he's becoming an old nigga in rap.
He's 33. He's 33. He's not the 22-year-old kid no more.
And his career length, not just...
Yeah. Yeah, he's going on 11 years now. He's been around for a minute.
He's been doing this for over a decade. I mean, listen, he's one of the biggest artists in the world. He was the top streaming artist of the decade. He's, you know, largely responsible for hip hop becoming the number one genre of music. So I'm not gonna knock Drake. I'm sorry for the background noise, y'all. There's construction going on. So I'm not gonna knock Drake for that. And he knows what his pocket is, and he stays in it really well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
However, he is part of, this is on my mind because I just literally just turned in the other day, the Smithsonian has a music division, and for the first time, they're doing a hip-hop anthology that's going to have an accompanying coffee table book.
Okay.
So I was asked to be part of the anthology, so I just submitted my piece for them, which is basically about the aughts and the tens. So Drake is a large part of that conversation. So he's been on my mind. So like Drake is really good at what he does, but he's not like you can't really, you could put him in GOAT conversations because of how he became the face of like the internet rap star and because of how he became like the face of a streaming artist. But lyrically, he's clever, but he doesn't push himself. I don't think he pushes himself. I think he's really good at catching trends and riding waves and, you know, getting stuff that's going to be earworms and that people are going to retweet and post. He raps in tweets and fucking Instagram captions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think creatively he's been stretching himself over this past decade. And actually a writer did a story about that, about how when he was 22 and Drake dropped, like everything Drake was saying was his life. But now at 33, as a husband and a father, like Drake is still talking to a new class of 22-year-olds with every album.
Right? He hasn't grown. He hasn't necessarily, his content hasn't necessarily grown with his audience. And I think that for maybe a couple of stretches, he was able to still capture that audience at, you know, 26, 27, you know, even 28. And I just think now, to be honest, man, his music feels really uninspired. Like he doesn't, you know, I don't really get that he is loving.
It doesn't feel passionate.
It doesn't feel passionate. It feels like I, you know, it's my job. Like I come, I do my job well. You know, very much like I would say probably like Ricky Williams in the NFL. Like,
yeah,
I'm really fucking good at this, but I don't really want to do this.
We love it. I saw an article that Drake, he said, an interview rather, where he said he admitted that his last two couple projects, you know, from Views kind of to now, weren't inspired. He says that this new project that he's going to drop, this new album, is very inspired. We'll see. What I find interesting about Drake is he's become like the demarcation line for generations.
Agreed. Like,
He is the guy. Like, if you're on the side of, because there's people, there's a younger demo that he is absolutely the GOAT. There's no debating it. It's like, niggas, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about. This nigga's the GOAT. And every time he drops something, it's literally Jordan and LeBron. It's the same shit. Like, that is the line. Like, there's a group of people who are a little bit younger who think LeBron's the GOAT, period. That's it. Like, and just like Jordan, Jay-Z, who kind of is the GOAT for people on the other side of that line, for the most part, has slowed down in his career, doesn't make records as much anymore. Jordan is obviously retired. He still has the sneakers and stuff. Now he has this documentary, which is kind of, you know, reintroducing him to a lot of younger people and letting them know what he really meant to the people on the other side of the line. And Drake is still going. So the people who talk about Hov is the GOAT, they're like, yeah, nigga, but like you said, nah, but like, look at the stats, and he's still going. You know, now I'm not saying this is right or wrong. I'm not arguing. I'm just saying that it's very interesting to see that very hard demarcation line of who or what Drake does to the rap.
Well, I also think he's the demarcation line because there also is a generational difference in how we view music, right?
So, like, absolutely.
The internet age has become an age where your greatness is measured in your stats, right? So it's like you stream so many, you got so many Billboard chart numbers, you got so many this, you did so many that, and it's a volume game now. Like, I believe that sometimes Drake releases shit just because it's been a minute since he released some shit. Mm. And it's like, I can't, like, Drake has... I think there's like one time that Drake has taken more than a year between dropping projects. Like,
yeah, I think it was like 2 years, two, 3 years ago.
Yeah, so it's you know, it's a volume game, and what these kids are like, what do your numbers look like? Mm-hmm. That's what the streaming and the SoundCloud and that era brought to us. It's not even so much about. I see this with Nicki's fans all the time. Every time they want to argue her greatness, they put up her
stats.
Yeah. And it's like
But Nicki's stats are very, you know, the barbs, please don't get at me, whatever, because the stats are definitely there. But Nicki's stats are very, very much muddy because it's a lot of features.
It's like an actor like Tyrese, and no disrespect to Tyrese because he's a talented actor, but it's like him saying, you know, my gig receipts are $4 billion.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, in these movies.
I was in a number one franchise.
You were in Transformers, my nigga. Like, nobody, like, whether it was you or Pootie Tang in Transformers, nigga, like, it was going to be the numbers.
Yeah, right. Same with Fast and Furious. It was going to be what it is, yeah.
That's exactly it. I think what's interesting, too, though, is that sort of demarcation is that there was so we know that there are less gatekeepers during Drake's run. So do you look at that as, wow, this guy was able to kind of stay on top as more people had access to, you know, being able to put out music and access to labels and content, things like that, and platforms? And or do you look at a guy like Jay who had to jump through? And I don't want to say jump through. That's probably the wrong term.
I would say, but it was he had to go through a different kind of gauntlet.
Yes, the gatekeepers were very different. The selection process, the investment process, and all of that sort of shit was very, very different. And I think you kind of, and again, it's just like you were saying, like there are just going to be people who will. There's nobody ever going to be better than Jordan, and to some people, there's nobody that's going to be better than Kobe or LeBron.
Right.
Just people in that groove.
Yeah, no, and one more thing, just to jump on your point, Sean, I find interesting is that with Drake, okay, so you said like Hov had the kind of different gauntlet, like, you know, the Source magazine and the 5 Mike albums and the 106 right. O'Clock, all those things that happened during his run, right? I think one of the reasons that Drake fans are so passionate about him too is because they picked him.
Because they
rocked it with him from MySpace.
Right.
They're like, I've been with this nigga from MySpace. So I picked him to right. like I feel part of me picking him to take this ride to get to, you know, obviously to this to the you know, the highest plateau you can get. But like, we rallied around him back when, you know, it was just MySpace pages and then they turned into SoundCloud and then so it's right. a very different. Like you said, so there's not really gatekeepers that didn't pick Drake. The fans picked Drake. So it's very different. It's very interesting.
And also Drake represents, like, it was when people were moving away from the Sources and the Double XLs and looking at the Nah Rights and the...
Yes, and the blogs. The blogs.
The Rap Radars. Mm-hmm. So it was also that blog music era, which I have a whole nother rant about because it fucked up music journalism to an extent. They served a purpose, but yeah. after a while, it was more like, this is my friend Drake that
yeah,
heard
yeah.
about. You know, what I mean?
They were fake. You know what I mean? But you know who's the new version of that now is Academics.
Right.
Academics is that. Like, I like this guy, and now he's developed a relationship with some of these artists. So it's like, now these are my friends.
Right.
So I'm going to give them good reviews because they're my people.
You completely lose the objectivity.
Exactly.
And we end up where we are now, where every time you disagree but an artist, or you think the artist isn't the best thing.
You're a hater.
Right, you're a fucking hater.
Yeah.
So, I mean, listen, like I said, I'm proud of Drake. We've never seen a run like Drake's ever.
Ever. And it's still going.
And it's still going, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But like I said, it is a combination of things. I'm not going to discount it because it's definitely not easy to do. He's charismatic. It helps that he's good looking. You know, girls love him because he's emo and he's doing the singing rap shit. Mm-hmm. And like I said, he tweets and fucking, and that in itself takes a skill. He tweets in very quotable, very digestible bites.
Yes. So that becomes part of the culture.
Yeah. It's very easy to text it, post it, mm-hmm. caption something with it, which is, and he knows it's a formula, and I'm not going to knock him for a formula that works. But he's not. I was having this conversation with somebody. I'm not a Drake fan. I've liked Drake songs. I've never yet rocked a whole Drake album beginning to end. Not a single one.
You should. I'll send you a couple.
I just haven't, not even nothing was the same, not even if you're reading this, it's too, like, I just haven't. I'll skip around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I may have heard them because somebody else was playing them, but like sitting in my house playing a whole Drake album, has not happened yet.
Two more things. I know another album I know y'all definitely don't care about. Chris Brown and Young Thug definitely dropped the project yesterday.
Absolutely do not care. I heard it's amazing.
It's actually really good. There's some really good shit on there. Yeah, like, it's called Slime and B. There's some really good shit on there. I ain't gonna lie. It's only on SoundCloud and stuff now. I don't even know if it'll ever become on the streaming platforms. It's on SoundCloud and, like, I think in, like, Dat Piff or something like that. And then I want to just mention Adele, which is not really a music conversation, but obviously she's a music artist. So Adele's birthday was it yesterday or the day before yesterday?
Yesterday.
Yeah, and she put a picture out of herself, and she's lost like a dramatic amount of weight, but looks, you know, healthily. It's not like
she looks healthy.
She looks like she's like been on a diet and, you know, been exercising. I'm sure working with, you know, training.
And we've been seeing the weight loss gradually. The last time she posted anything close to a full body picture was around Christmas.
And yeah.
You still couldn't really quite see. And she had on like a full dress with sleeves and mm-hmm. stuff, and now she's got on like a little mini skirt.
Yeah. And she's small. She's small, especially compared to what she was before. And on the timeline, this seems to have caused like a, I don't know if controversy is the right term, but like just people kind of
chatter
because of people saying like, oh, now y'all think she's pretty because she lost weight, and, you know, like, why does she have to lose weight to get this type of attention? And my thing is, First of all, I never remember anybody saying Adele wasn't pretty. I never remember people saying she wasn't attractive. She was just a bigger girl. I don't remember anybody saying Adele. Was she a sex symbol? No. But I don't think people were like repulsed by Adele or like looked at her as not an attractive woman. But it's definitely a different type of attention now because of her size. But I mean, I kind of don't know. We don't know the reasons that why she decided to change herself, and maybe we never will. But like, I don't understand. Like, what are we supposed to say?
I don't know that we're supposed to say anything. That's the thing, right? So it's like I'm seeing three different conversations happening. I'm seeing one conversation that's like, "Oh damn, she lost the weight. I hope she keeps her voice," right? Or, feeling like they're. I think there's some people who, even if they can't articulate it, they feel like Adele's music is more relatable when she's a big girl.
Like when Mary's
shit was fucked up, like that type of thing. Like on some, I know you probably going through it because you're not like the hottest, cutest, whatever, which is also in and of itself fattest on the low, right?
Yeah, and kind of talk, I think when people say shit like that, you're kind of telling on yourself.
Exactly.
About how you feel.
There's another group that's like, yes, now we're going to stand for Adele, yes, yes. And people are saying be cautious of that because we don't know if she lost the weight through trauma, if she lost the weight healthily, she's going through a divorce, etc. And then there's another school of thought who's just like you said, like, what? Why is everybody concerned about Adele losing weight? My thing is, is she happy? She looks happy. Every picture I've seen of her in the past several months, like, she's having the time of her fucking life.
Mm-hmm.
And, for whatever reason she did, she's got a child. You know what I mean? Like, maybe she just wants to be more active. Maybe she just did it for herself. Like, we don't know. Like you said, we don't know why she lost the weight. We don't know how she lost the weight. We know it didn't happen in a month. It's been happening
over time.
Happening over the course of a year. And, we'll see how the music sounds. I want to be, like, I posted the picture, but I just posted it to say, wow, because when I saw it, I really was like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I have no further judgment than that. I can't.
We'll
I don't think
I mean,
we're in a place to.
God bless her. I wish her well. I like Adele. I like the sense of Chasing Pavements.
I don't remember us having this well, Jennifer Hudson wasn't really an established star when she dropped all that weight yet. But I don't remember us having a conversation. I guess because Jennifer also like was very transparent about her weight loss journey. But it's also this is gonna be another fat Luther, skinny Luther conversation. Yeah, like, God forbid her weight start yo-yo, and then everybody's gonna be in her business.
Yeah. This weekend we have a Versus coming up. We got Jill Scott versus Erykah Badu.
Which is an interesting direction to go in.
Yeah, I mean, I figured they were going to get two women at some point, and I didn't know who those two women were going to be. But I know they would eventually they would have to include women into these battles.
And they went with Femme the Future, which is an organization that promotes women in live music and live entertainment.
So oh, okay, I didn't know that. That's dope.
Which was smart.
This will be my question, and nobody else on this podcast right now is
Femme It Forward. I'm sorry, I said the wrong. It's Femme It Forward.
Okay, so this is going to be my question. Nobody else on this panel has to take even has to answer this or say anything about this. I'm a fan of both. Let me preface this question by saying that I'm a fan of both.
Something crazy.
Does Jill Scott have 20 hits?
She might not have 20 charts. Erykah ain't got 20 charts.
I don't mean charts. I ain't talking about charts. I just mean hits in the black form. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think Jill absolutely has 20 joints. I do.
I do.
I think she does. If you include, she got four of them from the first album alone.
Yeah, well, the first album's classic.
She got four of them from the first album alone. She got Golden, she got the joint with Anthony Hamilton, she's had shit over the years, but I also don't know, they may also be changing the format, right? Because this also seems like it's gonna be, this is a singer's battle even yeah. though Jill has a bit of a pin game. I see people already debating on who's going to put You Got Me Up because Jill wrote it and Erica sang it. Yeah. But
I like the little promo clip that they did when they were kind of singing to each other, which showed me that it's going to be, you know, cordial. But they both shit talkers.
They're both shit talkers.
Like, don't get it fucked up. They're not going to be on here like Kiki, and they're going to be talking shit.
They're gonna be talking shit, but they're girls. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think it's gonna be fun. I think it's gonna be entertaining.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
And I do think the challenge is there are, even though there are women who write, there are far fewer women who produce. Mm. Missy said a long time ago she didn't want to do it. Although
she's not gonna do that.
Missy and Esther Dean could go up against anybody. They don't even need like a woman's battle.
I don't think she would
understand the vulnerability for women who write to try to do this because, you know, niggas gonna nig. Like, I can already see somebody, as much as people, like, we would love to see Candy Burris and somebody, I can already see motherfuckers being like, I'm not showing up for that. And then the numbers are low. Yeah. And then, you know, it reflects poorly and whatever. But I know that Swiss had been saying for a while that he was trying to figure this out. So going the singer route, I get it. I did want to see if they were going to try to actually pull out, like, a songwriter battle, but again, it's like there are very few women who have 20
that catalog that long. Exactly.
That aren't all their own songs, right?
Yeah, like Mariah could do it, but I'd be stunned. I just don't think Mariah would actually do it. I'd love to see Brandy versus Monica too, but I don't know if that's
let's let the Brandy versus Monica rest. Let's let them two rest because it's kind of real. And I don't know how much, like, they might try to play it off, but it's also kind of real. And I think it might get a little salty. It's been 20 years. We need to let it be.
And then on Sunday, we have, for Mother's Day, we have Babyface himself. There's no battle this time. Going through the Way to Exhale album, which he wrote and produced the whole album, which I still don't think people give him the proper credit for writing and producing that whole fucking album by himself,
with
every diva at the time, from young like Brandy all the way up to like Chaka Khan and Patty, like, and everybody in between. Like, I just don't think that. I mean, I know it was a big album, and I know like, you understand what this nigga did? Like,
all these different voices of different like pockets of soul and R&B, you know. Songs that match them, songs that fit them, and like just to even have that many, just to have an album full of women, period, first of all, just to have a soundtrack full of women, period.
Incredible. But
then to craft, like you said, to craft a song for each woman and her style and her voice was,
it's incredible. It's fucking incredible. So he's going to go through that album on Sunday. And talk about, you know, have to tell stories about the songs and all that stuff. So I'm actually really looking forward to that as well. So we got some good music shit coming up. Let's talk about. I'm gonna hold that one till a little later. Let's talk about what you've been watching. The what you've been watching segment.
I finished Grace and Frankie, which I told you guys I was watching all of last week. I just started Schitt's Creek, which has been suggested to me a lot over the years, which is actually really funny.
Okay.
And I watched two things. So on Amazon Prime, I watched this series called Upload, and it's about 30 years in the future, I think it's only like 10 or 20 years in the future. Before you die, before you actually die, your consciousness can be uploaded to a virtual reality world. So there are these different kinds of heavens. Like, there's a Disney Vacations heaven. There's a, you know, one that Google runs. There's one of these. It's like, it's almost like how you have timeshares. Mm-hmm. So there are these different heavens that you can pay for in advance so that if you're close to dying, you can upload yourself to this virtual reality heaven and there, you know, for eternity. And even if you get tired of it, you can move somewhere else. And there are different levels of service based on how much you want to pay a month and all this other shit. So it's interesting. So it's about this. So this guy who gets killed, and his girlfriend uploads him to her family's virtual heaven so that she can basically control him in the afterlife until she gets there. And she can control everything because there's like in-app purchases. So like if you want a spa treatment, you gotta pay extra. It's very cute. I don't know if did you guys see Matt Damon's movie Downsized? Did you ever see
it? No, but I heard it was really good actually.
It's really interesting.
I heard it's not what the trailer kind of made it out to be.
So this is a similar concept, but about the afterlife. It's also kind of like the Black Mirror episode Juniper Beach, where it's like,
oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was
it's like that, but not as dark. So it's like Juniper Beach, but not as dark. And there's a murder plot wrapped up in it because it turns out the kid might have got murdered for some software he was working on. So I watched that. That's interesting. And that's the only thing about binging something like that is brand new. I went through all 10 episodes. Now, obviously, we're not going to get anything new before, like, 2022.
Yeah, you're like,
which is depressing. Yeah. And then I watched Ryan Murphy's Hollywood on
Netflix. Yeah, hold on that, because I want to talk about that.
Okay. And I think other than the regular stuff, like, obviously, 90 Day Fiancé. But I haven't, I haven't been watching a lot of my, like, I still haven't jumped back into Love & Hip Hop Atlanta. I need to catch up on Billions. The new seasons of Billions is back. I'm a season behind. I'm a season behind on Homeland. I didn't watch this season's Westworld. I don't know what it is. I'm not getting into the stuff that I would usually watch. I need to jump back into that.
Yeah. Bro, what you watching?
I mean, same old shit. I ain't really watching nothing particularly, you know, interesting, man. I'll be watching motherfucking how to smoke video, a hog.
Nigga video. Nigga watching on YouTube.
Yeah, nigga videos.
You know, looking at gun videos.
Yeah. Like what's the best tongs to flip that meat on the
Dead ass. Where you get some wood from?
Yeah. You know, where I get the hickory, best hickory from?
Yeah, shit like, I mean, other than that, I'm watching, you know, basic syndication shit, you know, repeats on shit, you know, revisiting old shows.
Okay.
You know, Parks and Rec, you know, like that.
Okay. I watched a couple things. So I watched the Zenobia Brown doc on Netflix, even though I know she's not getting money for that. I would love to wonder how that was possible that she didn't get compensated at all, because in the doc, they follow her for 16 years. I'm like, from the time she's 16 until the time she gets out, she's 32. I'm like, there was no... I don't know, maybe it's a prison. I don't know what it is. It's like nobody, or the lawyer. And then
her conviction wasn't overturned, correct?
No, it wasn't overturned.
Yeah, so you can't.
Oh, because you can't profit.
That's under Sam law. They might have not compensated her in a traditional sense, but they may have been able to do something that was able to help her out, you know, either upon release.
Okay.
Or I don't know. I mean, they're obviously, I'm not an attorney, but, and they're clearly, you know, smarter people than me in charge, and they can find creative ways to pay people as they normally do. Cause I'm 100% sure nobody named Gotti is doing anything that they're not being compensated for.
Absolutely
right.
So,
you know, yeah, they can probably figure it out. But in a very traditional sense, I'm sure that they couldn't just issue
a check or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So watch that. It was interesting, like I said, because they follow her from 16 to 32, and you see her, like, you know, obviously she walks in, she's a child. She's like a child. Even, like, her hairstyles, like, she's a kid, you know? And, you know, obviously then by the time she starts to mature, you see, like, her change and... her start to kind of take ownership of what she did, and you know, and upon release, she's a, you know, full grown woman, and it's very interesting to kind of watch her metamorphosis. And I found more about her background, like her mom is Black, but that's actually her adopted mom, and so she comes from like this family who's like mostly white, but I think it was a Black guy that probably came through who got her mom pregnant, and you know, her biological family is all like on drugs, and there's a lot of mental health issues. It's like a lot. It was a lot to her. So I found that kind of interesting. I watched Afterlife, which is a Ricky Gervais series. This is actually season 2. It's about
I watched season one, but I couldn't get into season two just season yet. Two. I really enjoyed season one.
Yeah, yeah. It's about a character whose wife has died of cancer at the beginning of the series. She's already dead, you know, season one even. And he's got all these videos that he's filmed of her, and he looks at the videos all the time on his laptop, and he's just in a super dark place because, you know, it was the love of his life, and he just can't move forward, and he can't, like, he's just cynical and mean to people, and just he just can't move past losing the love of his life to the point where he's, like, suicidal. And but obviously with Ricky Gervais, there is comedy in it as well. It's very dark comedy. Very dark comedy, but it's very good. Season 2 is very interesting because it doesn't pick up too far in after season 1, maybe like a year or two. So all the same characters are there.
That's like his months. I didn't think it needed a season. I was surprised to see a season 2. I didn't think it needed a season 2.
Yeah, apparently ratings did well on Netflix. So, you know, I didn't expect a season 2, honestly, after 1. So I watched that. I watched Jerry Seinfeld's stand-up yesterday. Just dropped yesterday. It's called 23 Hours to Kill. If you're a Seinfeld, you know, stand-up fan, you'll like it. He's sharp. He's on point. He's talking, doing the Jerry shit, you know, taking small things and stretching them out and making them really funny and interesting. So it's really, really good. And he also said that he doesn't think he's going to do another season of Comedians in Cars.
I don't know if he had anybody left to talk to.
He said he don't want to do it. He's like, I'm tapped out. He said, like, it's really intense. It's not as easy as it looks. And, yeah, and I think he didn't say that, but I think I said, too, it's like, I mean, all the people I wanted to talk to, I talked to. Like, now I'll be just talking to niggas I don't even fuck with, you know?
Right.
So, which I think is the legitimate reason why. Intense? Is it intense, nigga? Like, you guys get in a car.
He says the editing and stuff is very intense.
But intense, though? Yeah, clearly you're not saying that. But I'm like, intense?
My guess is that the other elements. My guess is that booking these motherfuckers, first of all, because some of these comedians are just so fucking weird.
And busy.
My guess is that booking them, getting them to agree to it, figuring out, and I don't know how much Jerry is involved in these things, but figuring out where they're going to go.
Yeah.
And then there's also like the car element that they add to every one of
them. I'm almost 100% positive the car shit is him. Like he's probably picking. Yeah. That's actually. Look. I'm not being dismissive of the fact that shooting a television show is hard, right? It is work, but I would be very hard pressed to think that shooting episodes of Comedians in Cars would be as intense as shooting an episode of Seinfeld.
Sure, I think probably the hardest thing is because if you've noticed, there's been a few. I think the hardest thing is probably working with these other comics. Where they're like, are we done yet? Can we stop talking about? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's because they have to keep hours of conversation going just to get those 20 minutes.
And there's probably a lot of shit that those comedians, like you said, I mean, he's not going to do this with anybody that he doesn't respect.
Right,
and that he doesn't think is funny. And then, you know, Jerry's fucking rich, like rich. Like my car collection has its own garage, Rich. I mean, what are we talking about here? He fucking sells $3 million Porsches to make room for new Porsches. This is inconsequential to him, especially again if he's not motivated.
Yeah, he don't got to do it. He ain't doing it because he has to. Exactly.
And so intense is relative. Based on a retired rich man.
Versus me sitting at home chilling.
So I would, again, if you're a Seinfeld fan, I would recommend that. And I definitely wanted to talk a little bit about Hollywood. Now, I haven't finished it.
You know what? Did you watch Bad Education?
No. No, it's good. I heard it's good.
Now you know what it is.
Bad Education. Watch Bad Education. It's on HBO right now. It has Hugh Jackman, Ray Romano was in it. The leading actress is fairly well known. I can't think of her name right now, but when you see her, you're like, oh, I've seen her in a bunch of other stuff. It's based on a true story. of, I can't remember the guy's name, I think his last name was Falcone or something like that, out of Long Island. And basically, they embezzled roughly $11 million from the school system. And as we know, in a lot of these suburban places, your school system really drives home values and, you know, where you kind of rank. And that's a really, you know, that's a really big indication of, you know, again, property values and, and who lives in that neighborhood and the type of people you live next to. But like, it's wild. I mean, I wouldn't give it away because neither of you have watched it, but you should definitely watch it. It's a, even though it's like a 2-hour movie, I promise you did not feel like a 2-hour movie. It,
okay.
It's an easy watch. It makes sense. It's a very short period of time. So it's not like, jumping all over the place. It's a very, yo, dude, like basically the movie occurs in, and it's like a, it's like maybe a 5-month period, 3-month period. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like,
wow.
It's a very short, compact time period. And it's written by a kid who was in school, in that school system. He was in middle school in that town when this happened.
He saw it happen firsthand. Yeah,
he was there. He was there, you know, and it shows you how it, how the story was broke, was interesting and all of the sorts of things. It's really, really good.
Okay, I'm going to check that out. So I want to talk about Hollywood, too. Like, I haven't finished the series. I think I'm up to episode like 6. So kind of try not to give out too many spoilers now, because I know you watched the whole thing. But it's a Ryan Murphy production. Ryan Murphy does Pose. He did Glee.
He did American Horror Story.
Like he's the
way
shit.
Back in the day, he did Nip Tuck.
Yeah, he's the shit. He does. He's a don.
A couple of years ago, he did what was it with the two Hollywood actresses? He did when they were shooting What Happened to Baby Jane.
Oh, Betty Davis and Joan Crawford.
Yeah, it was Betty versus Joan. He did Betty versus Joan. So he's done some old Hollywood stuff. He did Betty versus Joan. I want to say last year, year before last, he did something that was about Posse. So this, I guess, is part of like that. Ryan Murphy loves camp and he loves old Hollywood.
Old Hollywood.
Those
yes.
two things are like his favorite.
Yeah. So what the series is called Hollywood. So obviously that's what it's about. It's based in, I think, in the late 40s, not long after World War II. Because a lot of the people in the, a lot of the male, actors in the show talk about, I just was in the war, I just came from the war, that kind of thing. So it's very interesting because he's taken real life stuff and mixed it with fiction.
Beyond that, it's fantasy. It's not even just fiction. Like,
yeah, fantasy.
I went into it thinking it was going to be kind of like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Like
exactly. And there are pieces of that type of thing in it. Right. But it's not like that overall.
It's legit fantasy. And it took me probably 4 episodes for it to really click. Because I was watching the first 2 episodes and doing something else at the same time. Mm-hmm. And like, there was one point where I was like, what the fuck is going on in this TV show? Because it was some things were too straightforward and too idealized, which is not Murphy's style. Like, mm-hmm. Murphy is very extra and over the top, but this wasn't his style.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what is happening? And then I was like, oh, it's meant to feel like if you watch those movies from that era,
it's meant to feel like that,
right? Mm-hmm. So like if somebody has some big ambitious scheme they want to accomplish, like they defeat the odds and everybody wins, mm-hmm. and bad guys learn the lesson, and you know, the guy gets the girl, like all of that shit.
Yeah,
you know, like,
and everybody's great looking and wears great clothes and
exactly
put together properly. What he's done though is he's added. It's very, you know, for the people who listen to the show, like I guess more of the guys really. There's a lot of homosexuality and the homoeroticism or whatever in the show. It's not a gay show, but it's this, he's showing you like
it. It's about the positive homosexuality of the movie industry.
Exactly. He's showing you like era. That's what that. No, even now.
The fact that he takes, like, for example, Rock Hudson, who was one of the biggest Hollywood heartthrobs ever, but who died of AIDS, right? Mm-hmm. it's like there's an alternate history for Rock Hudson, right?
Exactly. So I think, and he's showing Rock Hudson's real, like the quote unquote real history, because right. apparently some of the things like are true, like that was
what Henry did to him is true.
Is true, and that yeah. Rock was kind of like a dumb guy from the Midwest, and right. couldn't act his way out of a paper bag, and right. so like a lot of that stuff is real. And then there's a Latifah plays Hattie McDaniel, mm-hmm. who was either bisexual or lesbian. So she talks. There's scenes with that in the movie, but then there's characters who he's made up too, like. The guy Archie Coleman, who's a black guy,
black writer.
Who's basically like a male gigolo, you know, dating men to live, but he's a screenwriter,
right?
And then him and Rock link up, and then he's his script gets picked up,
right.
which didn't happen in 1957.
Which didn't happen.
Black, yeah,
and exactly. This is Ryan's take on what if Hollywood had decided to confront.
Racism,
mm-hmm. and sexuality, right? Mm-hmm. Early on in the game. What if that had been allowed to happen? And it's also a flip of the story where the starlets come to Hollywood and they have to go through the casting couch and they have to, you know, they're sleeping with rich guys to make ends meet until.
And there are little snippets of that too in there.
But that's what I'm saying. It flips it.
Because it's the men, it's the
men
boys.
Men were doing it too.
So there's a lot of that. So, but again, even with all, again, some of the scenes, I can't find, I was just kind of like, but even with that, like, it's really well done. The episodes move quickly. It doesn't feel like they're dragging. There's a good real kind of pace to them. And it's just kind of interesting. Apparently the black woman, is based a lot on Dorothy Dandridge.
I can see that.
Yeah, based on a little bit of Lena Horne, and they kind of took a little Lena Horne, a little Dorothy Dandridge, to put them together and created her. I suggested I'm only up to episode 6, but it's very interesting to kind of see how it's unfolding, and because they get into like the money stuff, and how they're showing, not necessarily behind the scenes, but they're showing a little bit more about like how these films are really like done. Financially, and it's not just like let's make a film, guys. It's like
there's a business of it. I mean, I would just say know what it is when you're going into it.
Yes, I didn't. So I was kind of like, whoa.
And I've seen several, and I was surprised because I saw a lot of people saying this is really good, and I was like, is it? There's a lot going on. But again, like I said, the first two episodes, I was. Writing something, doing something on Zoom. I don't know. Something else was happening, so I was losing threads of the plot. But if you go into it knowing what it is, I think you'll enjoy it much more. Because I even saw when I tweeted first, I was like, what exactly is Ryan Murphy doing with this show? And a whole lot of people were like, a lot. I don't know. It's a lot happened. But then I was a little bit later, I was like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people were like, yeah, once it clicks, you'll enjoy it. So once I saw it for what it was.
Did you go back and watch 1 and 2 over again?
I went back and watched the first episode over again because I realized I missed some things.
Okay.
I missed some things, not in terms of the plot, but in terms of the tone that he set.
Okay.
So apparently
that gas station was a real thing too.
I believe that.
No, it was. It was a real, this gas station where like all these like, that's where the tricks get turned. Like people pull in and say, give me the Wonderland. And you jump in with a guy or a girl and you go. So it's a lot going on. Yeah, but apparently that's a true story. So I recommend it. But like I said, like know what it is and be prepared. You know what I'm saying? But if you can get past some things, it's actually a really good, series. Let's talk Last Dance. What was this week? 5 and 6, 7?
Five, six.
So it's definitely like kick turned up to another level. There's a lot of gambling talk in this one. Isaiah talk in this one. Dream Team talk in this one. Mike's deal with Nike talk in this one. Very little Dennis Rodman, almost none. It's like one or two scenes. A little bit of Scotty, not a lot of Scotty. A lot more B.J. Armstrong in this one, in these two, I should say. But again, like really well done. Really, just really, you know, really, really well done. What'd you think, bro?
I thought it was good. You know, again, the way they sort of jump back, it can be a little difficult to follow for some people, but mm-hmm. I think it's an interesting tool being used. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you know, Mike, you know, they talk about the Sam Smith book.
Yes.
And the Jordan rules. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things I think people like Mike have an issue with is, like, they don't process that people don't like them. Right? Like, they have a very difficult time with understanding why people don't fuck with them, because in their mind, all I've ever done was push you to be great. Well, Mike is an unrelenting asshole.
If it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have been where you got.
Yes. And so that's why. So he blames Horace Grant. And I'm going to use that. You know, he blames Horace as sort of the person feeding Sam Smith this information.
Mm-hmm.
But what I thought was interesting that they didn't quite dive into it was when B.J. Armstrong is like, that couldn't have been all Horace.
Yeah.
And the suggestion to me was that a lot of people didn't like
Mike. Yeah.
They tolerated Mike in the same way he tolerated them. Like, Mike doesn't really nurture relationships. Which
not at all.
It's again, this is not an indictment on him as a person. But I mean, that Mike, you're talking about 27-year-old Mike, 28-year-old Mike.
Yeah.
Like, he's not sitting there trying to fucking coddle people. And, you know, the way we see relationships and how they develop now and going out to dinner and all that shit. Like, we ain't friends. Motherfuckers show up, run the play, do your job, and let's get this ring.
Yeah.
Like, we're all here for a common goal. And it is very difficult for people who are driven like that to really sort of not, like, if you don't want to fuck with me because I want you to be great, then you're a piece of shit and I don't want to fuck with you.
Yeah, then you should get the fuck off the team.
Yeah, you trash anyway, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think that even though right now I think it's and I'm just going to go out on a limb and say this, the tragic and untimely death of how Kobe died is never going to allow us to have this kind of a documentary on him. No matter how far away we get, right? Like, we're never going to really sort of get into the meat and potatoes. And we got to remember that Jordan is also an EP on this. So there's only but so much that they were going to sort of dive into.
Yeah, he had final say on what people could say and not say about him.
Because to me, you know, the, what center was it? Bill Winnington? It might not have been Bill Winnington. But one of them was just saying that, you know, Mike would come over and like play blackjack with them, you know.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah, you know, yeah.
Playing
yeah.
for a dollar. Like,
yeah.
They're playing for fun. And it was just like, you know, I get the sense, I truly, truly get the sense that he was a horse with blinders on when it came to competition, any level of competition. And if you did not meet his standard of competition, then he wasn't fucking with you, and he just thought you were lazy and beneath him. And there are a lot of Michael Jordans out there. Like, he's not alone. Like,
yeah, you're asking, absolutely.
You ask motherfuckers that worked with Puff and how he would talk.
Same shit.
The same mentality, the same drive, the same shit. And listen, that works for some people, and for some people it doesn't. But when you know, when you look around and it's only you, Ahmad, Rashad, like your brother Larry.
Yeah, that's it.
You know what I'm saying? And if you're okay with that, that's fine too.
Yeah, because I found it interesting how a lot of people were talking about, there was a scene, these two episodes are, you know, the underlying tone or theme of both these episodes is how his fame exploded to the point where, like, he became a prisoner of it. He couldn't go outside, couldn't do anything. You know, kind of like a Michael Jackson, you know, Muhammad Ali, Prince kind of thing, the Tiger Woods. You just can't go anywhere. So, his only kind of downtime was sitting in his hotel room by himself
or golf, or
on the elevator down to the lobby. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Once they show him on the elevator, and once the lobby doors open, it's like, ah! You know? But what I didn't see anybody kind of say is kind of what you're alluding to, bro, which is part of it, the reason I think that he wanted that time in his room alone is because, like you said, he wanted time alone. He needed time alone. He couldn't go anywhere. But even with that, if it was a couple of niggas on the team he was super close with, he could have went to their room or they could have came to his room. But it's like niggas didn't want to even be around a nigga, I don't think, like that. You know what I'm saying?
I think if Mike was not in a competitive situation, if you went to Mike's room, it wasn't to chill. It was to play cards.
Exactly.
It was to do something.
Pitch pennies or some shit.
Some weird shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't, and you can kind of see that he's even in this. Like, dude, we're in episode 6, and he hasn't once spoken about his personal life.
Yeah, his wife, nothing.
And how any of that had been impacted his prism and how he viewed the world. None of that shit.
Yeah.
None of that shit. And so, again, I think Mike is, you know, one of those guys that he has to win. Now, we talked about the gambling stuff, and people made a big, you know, a big deal about this. And the reality is that gambling, money is relative. And there is no rational sort of working man that you could tell, hey, I lost $57,000 to, that they would not immediately think that you had a problem.
Yeah, you're bugging out.
Because $57,000, even today, which that 1993 57 is probably something like 80 or 90.
Yeah,
80, now.
Yeah, I was going to say 100. Yeah, definitely. 100, yeah.
Right? So the reality is that it sounds like an enormous amount of money until you actually make it relative to what he makes. And that is like the equivalent to us going to Atlantic City. If you're like, just to say you're a working man making 50 grand and you went to Atlantic City and fucking blew off, you know, $500, $300.
Yeah, 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 yeah. $1,000. You'd be like, oh shit, I'm fucked up.
And if you notice, this is how I know this isn't, it's a competition issue. It's not a problem in terms of impacting him financially. Like, the nigga is pitching pennies with security guards for $20.
Yeah.
like, nigga, like, think about that. Like, the greatest basketball player in the world, yeah, right before a game, is pitching pennies for $20.
Yeah.
And because he can't, and that's what they were saying about
and
the
mad, and mad that he lost.
Dude.
He was a little tight. Like, when the white guy won and did the little shrug shit, he was a little tight.
hold up. I'm not sure that's a white guy.
No, he's white.
I'm not sure. I don't know.
His last name was Wozniak. He's a Polish guy. I think he grew up with the brothers.
I got to do a little more investigation because I thought he was white from all the clips, clearly. And then I heard his voice.
Yeah.
And I was like, hold on, I had to rewind because I was like, is that the black guy talking or is that the white guy talking? What's going on here?
Yeah, and nah, he definitely grew up with the brothers. All you can see,
I've seen a couple of them real, real, real super light Negroes where it's like, huh? Like, nah, I gotta do some research, nigga. Who your peoples?
Yeah, he definitely grew up with the brothers all his life. He probably from the deep south side of Chicago. Like, you can even tell what he had on, the pants with the pleats, the way he was wearing pants. He grew up with, he's white in skin, but everything else about him is black as fuck.
I just want to touch on the Isaiah thing because.
Yeah.
So what you have is the NBA at that time, obviously, they go to use the pros. This is the first time that they can use the pros. And the reality is that Magic and Bird were and had been the face of the league prior to that first real championship for Mike. And they didn't really have, you know, that like the NBA has sort of grown exponentially since they were in college and all of that sort of shit. So this was kind of like, I felt like this was a going away present for them. Mm-hmm. The reality was, is that, you know, look, was Magic still great? Sure. You know,
he wasn't Magic, it was like 1987.
Yes, yes. Like, so that's the thing that bothers me, is that when everyone processes that 92 team, like, Bird is on his last leg, my nigga. Like,
oh, Bird, in reality, shouldn't have been on the team.
Because he was low-key chilling. Bird wasn't even, like, Bird was at the sidelines in practice laying down. Like,
yeah, because he was hurt. His back was fucked up. Yeah. He couldn't play. Like, he really should not. He was on the team in name only. Like, talent-wise, he should not have been on that team.
And so we go into, listen, Isaiah Thomas is a piece of work too. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like he's not. He's my favorite point guard. And yes, like the clip says, I don't know what went into that process. I met the criteria and I wasn't chosen.
Yeah.
Right? That's just the reality of it. But for him to pretend like his beef with Mike wasn't a big issue, and it wasn't like that tension was palpable, dude. Like,
don't palpable now.
and nigga, this was only a year. This was barely a year after you guys had done the walking off the floor show.
Yeah.
So here's what happens when you're in management, and we've all dealt with talent. What we don't do is, we don't present an obvious obstacle for our job.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Ever. You don't present it as an option. Because the moment you do, you can't back out of it.
Can't get out of it.
If you put the Isaiah carrot out there, you lose Mike.
Yep.
He's checking out.
And Mike is more important at that point.
Mike is way more important at that point.
Yeah.
He's checking out, totally.
He might not even play. He might just be like, I'm not playing. I got an ankle injury. I can't play. Like,
Mike is 100% correct in saying that, you know, Isaiah had tension with other people on the team, and and his spirit, like Magic and Bird had understood and kind of released themselves to the idea that this was Mike's league.
Yeah.
Isaiah wasn't doing that shit.
Yeah, Isaiah was like, fuck that.
He had no give. He had no deference.
Yeah.
In any sports situation, there is a hierarchy.
No question.
There's going to be a hierarchy, my nigga. And yes, Mike is going to be the top dog in this.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is. Yeah. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, these guys, they always, you can talk to anybody that's been around sports. I remember the famous saying about Manny Ramirez. Oh, you know, Manny be doing this and Manny be doing that.
Manny being Manny.
Well, you go and you hit 39 home runs and bat 120 RBIs.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then you could do what Manny do too.
Exactly.
Until then, you shut the fuck up.
Yeah, but if you batting 220, then you ain't going to be able to do what Manny do.
How about that?
You know? Yeah. Did you watch it, Matt?
I watched it. I watched them while I was doing, like, I was working on a deadline, so I haven't watched them unencumbered. Yeah. So it was like I was checking in and out type of thing.
Yeah.
But I will say, with in regards to Isaiah, because people have been floating that clip around a lot, like, he comes across as the guy who is, like, who is mad because he has the skill, but he doesn't have the personality. Isaiah doesn't have the personality. Like, Mike was just more likable. Even if he was an asshole behind closed doors, he was more likable or more easy to get behind as a player than Isaiah was, to me.
Yeah, because Isaiah, for all his accomplishments, he only ended up having like one or two endorsement kind of commercials in his whole career.
Yeah, I mean, he strikes me as the guy who thinks he's smarter than everybody in the room.
He doesn't. He's absolutely that guy. I think the Bird comments impacted him.
Yeah.
First of all, Isaiah would have been, you know, in terms of endorsements, he is kind of what Steph Curry had embodied during that time, which was a little guy.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
with a great smile.
He's a handsome, he's a good looking guy. Mm-hmm. He's got all the swag. You go back and you see them pictures of Zeke, and he's got all that everything Chicago. Got it.
Yeah, no doubt.
The popped collar, the furs, all of that shit. He came with all of that. And so, for him to not get those things, I think was a lot of shit that kind of, you know, kind of went on behind the scenes, and people didn't really want to work with him and didn't really want to. Yeah. And listen, for a time, you could say, I don't really care, because he's a basketball lifer. He's never not going to do anything outside of, you know, outside of basketball. That's that's just what it is, you know. And he's another one whom I love, but, like, I'm sick of you niggas and it's just for men. Okay, you niggas, nigga, you 60.
Right.
Let's just 60, go. My nigga. Exactly. Stop it with the black hair.
Stop this.
The jet black shit, too.
The jet black. I also, you guys tell me if I'm off on this, because obviously at this point, I was more of a pro basketball fan than I am now. Actually, I watched it more often and more steadily. But even though the Pistons was a powerful team, they weren't like the Celtics, the Bulls, the Lakers, the Knicks. Like, they weren't. I don't remember, in terms of like Isaiah really being pushed to the forefront and getting endorsement deals and stuff, I don't remember the Pistons. I remember people having Pistons jackets and fucking with the Pistons, but it wasn't like the Bulls. It wasn't like the Knicks.
Well, yeah, well, one of the reasons is because of the style of basketball they played. It was very, you know, they showed on the clips. It was very
incredibly aggressive.
It was aggressive. They knocking niggas down. They just blood flying, like, literally.
They've been doing Malice in the Palace.
Exactly. So it wasn't appealing to anybody.
It wasn't Showtime.
Exactly.
Yes.
It wasn't going to get, like, the white lady in Cleveland. To like, I always tell people, like, I knew how big Michael Jordan was, obviously, but I always remember, like, my mom used to watch. My mom didn't watch basketball; she's not a basketball fan. Right. But when Michael was playing, she'd be calling me, "Michael's on tonight." Like, you know what I'm saying? You see Michael last night? That's how big he got. When he was getting like everybody.
Right. Let me tell you how big Michael is now. Mona watched it this week with me. Actually made me go back and play the DVR, you know, 1 and 2 and 3, like, so she could catch up.
Yeah, yeah.
Was mad that I was watching the other episodes and
without her.
Without
you know what I'm saying? Was all her.
Are you just going to watch it because it's on TV?
Yeah, like, she was on her Google. She has never watched. She could literally, Michael Jordan could ring the doorbell and drop off a package, nigga.
Right.
And she would sign and say thank you.
Right, exactly.
Keep it pushing. Yeah.
Inconsequential to her.
Yeah.
No, make no never mind. And that sort of cultural impact of having people glued and locked in and having them. And I also have to add, very, very same ultra competitive streaks like Mike.
Yeah.
Like, they you know what I'm saying? Like, scary, but
they see themselves.
So, and I think that's what made her want to keep watching.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I like you this nigga. I would have done the same shit.
I would yes.
Yeah. Fuck Scottie Pippen. You know what I'm saying? You know? Yeah, so to your question, that's what it was there. Their brand of basketball was not appealing to anybody outside of NBA fans.
Right.
Whereas with Mike and Magic and even the Celtics, that basketball style was much more appealing.
I would even say, not to cut you off, I would even say that particular brand was really appealing in the Midwest and that sort of Rust Belt.
Yeah.
When you got to the coast, we played very different. I mean, the Knicks style was hard, but it wasn't like that. The Knicks that we think of was born out of those bad boys.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, the music in this shit is amazing, too. Like, I don't know who's doing who's the music supervisor.
Well, I found the music soup's name. I was having that conversation somewhere else.
Yeah, music is incredible. They spent a lot of money on licensing, but they're playing shit like they play like Rosa Parks by the Outkast. Like, they're playing shit that I'm just not expecting to hear. Like, wow.
But they're also playing it in time, right?
No, so perfect.
Playing Rosa Parks as he goes to...
To the Georgia Dome. Yeah, exactly.
And it's 1998.
Exactly. Yeah, it's perfect.
Right on brand.
Right on point, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, whoever's not watching this shit needs to be watching because it's fucking incredible.
Music Soup's name is Rudy Chung.
Okay. Well, Rudy, you're doing your thing, bro. You're doing your thing. Real quick, the Obamas are having a big week. Michelle Obama's doc dropped today. It's actually out now. I saw it on Netflix. I'll probably watch it sometime before the week's over. Very interested to see that. And then they announced yesterday, I believe, that the Michelle and Barack Obama, or Barack and Michelle, how you want to say it, are going to do an online graduation for all the kids who obviously are not able to graduate high school and college. I don't remember the date. But I see, I mean, I think that's a really...
I want to say it's was it the 20? I don't remember
either. Yeah, I don't remember. But it's a great idea. I mean, it's a great idea. Like, this, they released yesterday kind of like the program. It's like an HBCU thing at the beginning.
I
want to
say there's one that they're doing for high school and there's one that they're doing for colleges.
Oh, it's the two separate ones.
I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, I like that.
There might be somebody else. Because a few people are announcing like these virtual commencement things right now. I think there might be separate for high school and college.
Yeah, I appreciated that. Also want to just mention the Murder Hornets coming to a town near you.
This shit, bruh, if this was a movie.
You'd be like, this is some bullshit.
It's like Sharknado at this point. Like, it is. So crazy. Now there's also fucking tiger mosquitoes in France.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
I just thought about this today. There's tiger mosquitoes in France that have fucking Zika. But these murder hornets, I'm really trying to ignore this story. I'm trying so hard. These bitches are gigantic. They look like water bugs. They're huge.
They're massive.
They're fucking massive.
What?
What is that?
This is crazy.
Somebody is somewhere opening some seals. We all like seal four, five.
Somebody went into one of the pyramids and opened up some shit, because this is crazy.
Yeah.
This is some
Armageddon.
It's awful.
I don't know what the fuck. It's in days.
Mother Nature is sending shit out. Yeah, like you said, if it was a movie, you'd be like, Hornets, nigga, word? Come on, get the fuck out of here. You know what I'm saying?
Between that and Kim Jong-un faking his death, which I knew was going to fucking happen.
Do you think he faked it?
He's back. The nigga did it.
But you think he faked it or he actually recovered?
Maybe not completely faked it, but apparently, like, it was to smoke out and see who around him was. I 100% believe that.
Yeah, like, let's see who's loyal and who's going to be on the fuck shit.
Right.
Yeah, it could be. Sidebar, Russians are throwing, three Russian doctors got thrown out of windows because they were working on a coronavirus vaccine. So, yeah, shit is just wild out here, bro. Like, stay inside.
Stay in the crib, nigga. I check that out. They Russians, man. So, you never know
what the fuck is the real. There's no such thing as truth with Russians. You know, ain't no real truth. We have to mention. Before I mention that, I wanted to mention. You know, the stories now. All these states opening up: Georgia, Texas, Florida. The weather was nice here this weekend in New York. People outside in droves with no masks. It's crazy, bro. I don't know, man. I just don't understand how motherfuckers is just rocking the no mask wave. Like, go outside. I go outside sometimes, ride my bike or whatever. But just no mask. You just out here, just walking on the street. Like, word? Like, just no mask? Mask costs $2. Mask costs $1. Like, you can get a mask anywhere. You get a mask at the deli. Unbelievable.
The one thing that we're not going to adapt to the way, like, you know, after SARS, and I think I mentioned this here before, after SARS, you saw a lot of people in Asia in general, like, we wear a mask. It's just part of the everyday
thing. Yes.
We are never going to adapt to that. I was thinking we would. It's not going to happen. Like, I saw a video of a lady. She was in the store with a mask. She had cut the mouth area out of the mask.
I saw that.
Because she's talking about it was hard for her to breathe. Yeah. Man, what?
That's the whole point, ladies.
Why do you still have one?
Yeah, I'm riding around uptown this weekend. What they doing uptown is they niggas got the mask on, but what they do is they take the mask and pull it under their chin.
Right.
So the mask. So you got the mask on your face. Yeah, but your face is wide open, my G. Like, what?
It's a piece of. I mean, listen. The mask is uncomfortable.
It's mad uncomfortable.
It makes you hot. It makes it hard to breathe. Yeah. All of that shit. But the bigger thing is, if you've seen the numbers and the difference in contraction versus wearing a mask and not. Granted, if you're the healthy one and the person who's sick doesn't have on a mask, it doesn't help you as much. But if you're unknowingly carrying the virus and you have on a mask, it makes like a 60% difference, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's just a responsible thing to do. And that's what, but nobody cares. Like, that's the thing. This shit, we already knew Americans were selfish, but more than anything, this period has exposed the fact that Americans are spoiled. We're the spoiled children of first world countries. And
we
think that it's so funny that Americans think that our rights are impeded when we can't do what the fuck we want.
When we want to do it.
But shit like healthcare and food and social support is a privilege, right?
Yeah.
But being able to carry your ass outside and get a haircut is
and
a
woman's rights. And all that shit. Yeah,
all that shit is a privilege. All that shit needs to be earned. All that shit is questionable. But going to get your haircut is a human right. Like, are you serious?
And this is, you know, listen, we've kind of known for a very long time that a lot of that Midwest and Rust Belt, and that sort of those southern red states, that they behaved in this way. But I think that this is really an American culture thing, right? Like, this shit is permeated to everyone in a way that is kind of wild to witness. And I mean, we spoke about this before about how we don't operate in communal ideas. There is no part of us that we feel like as long as we're okay. And it's not even like if it's just us and our families, because motherfuckers are really like not giving a fuck about their families.
No, it's me.
Like, it's me. Like, I don't have it, and I don't give a fuck if you can get it or not. And it is just, and what's crazy, man, is like you said, it's like we're living in a nation of petulant children, like people who have no discipline, no self-control, and no self-awareness. And those, and it's like, do they not have these things, or do they have these things and just don't give a shit? Because I feel like there's a marriage of both, and it's kind of like, and not kind of, it's just, it's like, it's crazy to me. But I also think that with the news of the deaths, particularly being highlighted as predominantly black and brown, predominantly black and brown, that it has, what it does is it goes to a core of that Republican red state base.
Yeah, but we ain't getting it. That's them.
But not just that. But we're being impacted financially for something that's happening to them.
Right. Like, we're being punished.
We're being punished for something that is happening to them.
Mm.
And that's a big part of why you're seeing these protests and people are out there doing all of this shit. Now listen, I mean, you got the crazies with the guns and all of that sort of shit. And they you know, that's par for the course. In a lot of states. So that's not really surprising for me at all, but it is surprising to just kind of see how so many people, even in blue states, I mean, we've seen our communities impacted in a disproportionate way, and there's still like this lack of empathy.
Yeah.
It's like there's always an excuse as to why we're being impacted. Oh, those people had pre-existing conditions.
Yeah.
Oh, those people did X, Y, and Z. That's not me. And there's this. There's always this other. This sort of. It won't happen to me.
Yeah.
Like until it happened to you. Like we all say that shit. We all say that shit because. I've never had my ass whooped by the cops, but I ain't no fucking fool, and I know it can happen to me today.
Right. In an hour. Shit. You know what I'm saying? Right? Yeah.
In my driveway.
Yeah. That
doesn't escape me.
Yeah. It's crazy. I saw somebody tweet something which was so on point. They said, I'm not saying it verbatim, but they said basically like, it's such the American way for us to be like, we're bored with COVID, so now it's over.
Exactly.
Like, I'm bored sitting in the house.
Enough of that. I'm bored. I'm not sick yet. The world didn't collapse.
Yeah. So fuck it. It's over with, and I'm ready to go back to work. Like, that's, you know. But again,
a lot of these people are being paid to protest. A lot of these are.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
Because they are being impacted, and you know, obviously financially, they're being impacted in negative ways. You have states that are going to be you know, strapped for cash as they continue to dole out unemployment checks. And I think that they feel like the sooner they get this shit up and running, the better. And if he dies, he dies. Motherfuckers out here like Drago.
Exactly, exactly. I also want to mention, I want to say the name right, Ahmaud Arbery.
Yeah,
the 25-year-old man in Georgia who was jogging in South Georgia, actually next right where Shannon Sharpe was from, Brunswick.
Brunswick, Georgia.
Yeah, yeah. He was jogging and he was attacked by two white men, a father and a son.
Gregory McMichael and Travis McMichael.
Exactly. And murdered, shot. They claimed that they thought he was some type of criminal and he was just jogging.
It was like George Zimmerman shit all over.
Yeah, literally. Because like the guy was a former cop.
Arrest. Yeah, they want some citizens arrest, neighborhood watch bullshit.
Yeah, yes. Which is why it explains so much why, especially in a small town like that, why there were no arrests made because the guy was a former cop. It tied into the whole system. There was a footage released, I guess, a day or two ago. I haven't watched it, and I don't want to watch it. Literally, of them murdering this.
I stumbled upon it accidentally.
Okay.
It was posted by we know who yeah. the guy who always posts.
Yeah, Talcum.
Incredibly traumatic things. I mean, nobody. Listen, if you want to see that. Or I should say, if you need to see that to be any more outraged, I don't know what to tell you, right?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't need to see that footage to know that he died an unnecessarily violent death.
For no reason. Because he was jogging. He's literally jogging.
So, you know, there have already been leaks of him having a criminal past, which we know is right on brand and right on target. Apparently, two prosecutors had recused themselves, and it seems as though this third prosecutor is operating under the guise, not the guise, they're allowing a grand jury to decide whether or not to bring charges. But I think that over the last day or two, there's just been so much, with the release of this footage, there's been so much more.
It's a national story now.
Yeah, and so I think it was, I felt like it was getting to that point, but it's at that point now. And yeah, we'll see what happens. I would like to think that a prosecutor can look at that video and kind of make a very simple decision on himself as to whether or not, you know, they should be, you know, brought up on murder charges. It harkens back to an old school lynching, right? Like a fucking
literally
white guy dangling out of a pickup truck with a gun. Like,
yeah.
there's
a nigga right there. Let's go kill him. Literally,
that is what you envision when you think about that, right? Like you think about James Byrd in the pickup truck, and you think about all of those, you know. So it's heartbreaking. It's heart wrenching. It's I can't even say scary because I'm no more alert about these situations than I had been before, right? Like, I've always sort of felt that tension. It shouldn't be like that, but we'll see what happens. I've seen that, you know, this guy, you know, has police connections. He was an investigator.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't quite call him an officer, though. So I'm not quite sure what he was, if he was, you know, maybe he was deputized by the county and
probably
as a private investigator of some sort. And a lot of times in those small towns, they're all, you know, they're all buddies. They're all boys.
Of course.
And
we've known each other since high school, junior high school type shit, you know?
And that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're definitely going to keep eyes on that. I want to end the show. Just talking a little bit about, did y'all watch Insecure?
I
did.
No, I haven't started the season yet.
Oh shit, y'all niggas. All right.
I'll watch it eventually. I know that Issa and Mouth are going through a friend breakup or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's like it's more deep. You know, that is what's happening. But you know, there's obviously some details and stuff that you need to kind of watch to really have a real conversation about it. So
I will say this: friend breakups are a real thing, or friend relationships running their course. You outgrowing each other.
Mm-hmm.
you realizing what used to hold you together doesn't anymore. It is a real thing. So I'm interested in watching.
Yeah, and I'm glad, and I know that's a real thing, and I'm glad that they're tackling that, because like I said before, but like the previous relationships are always like, the previous seasons rather, it's always been about, you know, Issa and Lawrence breaking up, and you know, right, it's kind of like the male female kind of.
But we saw the beginning of Issa and Molly. Like, we've seen the tension between Issa and Molly, but I also have to say this is not a diss to Insecure, but this is again where Insecure to me represents like a modern girlfriends for the new generation, because this happened with Joan and Tony.
And Tony Charles. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they. I'm not saying they bit that storyline, because you said this really happens, but you know, they're definitely like an influences there. But yeah, so like it's been good, and it hasn't been. There definitely have been some comedic parts to each episode. Some really funny parts actually, but it's not comedy driven this season. It's more real life driven, and there's way more drama in it than it has been, I think, in the past. You know, like I said, it's definitely comedy. It's just every so funny shit happens.
I think they recognize how the engagement on social media was driving, you know, eyeballs to the screen, and I felt like tackling these things with an undercurrent of comedy was, I actually thought it was better, right? Like it made some things, you know, it gave more connective tissue, in my opinion, to more people.
Yeah, I agree. Last thing I want to mention, and bro, I don't know how much you can, you know, talk about this, but and I don't mean Mon Ami in specifically. I just mean in a huge, broad scope of things. With COVID and everything happening, what is your prediction on reality shows in general? Because obviously reality shows are filmed, you know, the scenes tend to be people being very close proximity to each other, going to each other's houses, like gatherings, you know, whether it's fighting, whatever, that, you know, and obviously now with COVID, I don't know how much you can film a show like 90 Day Fiancé, because
90 Day Fiance is doing a quarantine version. They kept it moving.
Oh, they just keeping it moving. And maybe that's going to be, you know, a love is blind, or, you know, so just like the people are like next to each other in reality shows. Like, even Ayanna Van Zandt, how's she going to go talk? I don't know how they're going to, I don't know. Like, do you have any kind of insight? Again, not your stuff, but just overall.
I mean, I think that initially when we went into lockdown, I think a lot of places were looking for, for sort of COVID proof, ideas.
Okay.
And I think that they were flooded, right? Because what it does is you have production companies that are at home. They have, I would probably guess that most production companies have a bunch of content in different stages of development. So they might have had stuff that they, you know, went all the way through, didn't really pitch because it wasn't in the mandate. So they kind of go back and dust off. Hey, what do we have here? How do we freshen this up? You kind of go to very particular ideas that may be isolated. Cooking shows are an isolated show, right? Like, you can, you know, put a self, you know, throw up a camera, you know, put a green screen in somebody's house, and you can kind of shoot that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Technology is obviously lending itself to folks to be a little more creative in how they get to that content. Like, I don't know if you watch, I can't remember the show that Simone Mizek is on. It's on All Rise.
So All Rise. Yeah, I saw what they did. They changed everything to.
Yeah, they did like a virtual, it's basically a Zoom episode. You know what I'm saying? And Parks and Rec did a Zoom episode as well. So you're going to see more of that. You're going to see, you know, this sort of thing. You know, maybe it lends itself great for game show ideas. Maybe it lends itself, you know, so the other thing too is as states start to open up, you know, you take a state like Georgia, you know, Georgia is open.
With all that production is
happening. Yeah, Tyler Perry has been pondering opening his studio already.
And having people stay there, yeah.
I mean, you here's the thing, man, like, you're going to have to do that at some point. And I kind of mentioned this to you guys, you know, early on in this COVID shit, as I was like, we're going to get to a point where people are going to weigh what's the cost of doing business.
I think people are at that point right now.
That's what I'm saying. We're kind of at that point, because if you're, forget, you know, Tyler himself. Let's just say if you're a studio operating in Georgia, mm-hmm. you are not able to deliver content to networks. But California is up and running, and they've taken all of their restrictions down, and they are delivering content to networks. Now, how do you compete?
You don't. Right? Like, yeah, you can't.
There are going to be decisions that need to be made. People are obviously going to have protocols in place to be safe. You know, clearly they're going to be locked down. They're going to be locked down scenes, you know. So the thing about reality too, man, is that, you know, it doesn't have to be a lot of people in every scene, right? For the most part, you might have 2-3 people in a scene, you know, and you can do
kind of position to be further away from each other.
You can do that. They can be further away from each other. You might only need, you know, if you got 3 people in a scene, do you need more than 6 people on set, 7 people on set? I mean, yeah. I don't know. You yeah. know what I'm saying? I don't know what you could do. Do you, you know, give them camera? Do they take footage? You know, so there are lots of different ideas. And again, this is nothing particular to our stuff.
Just overall. Yeah.
Yeah. Broad stroking. You're probably going to see a lot of animators getting money, you know, because people can now voice the content at home, and animators can simply make the animation in another location. It's not.
That's interesting.
You might see a lot of that.
I mean, what I was thinking about, my concern was, I don't know if you guys remember the writer strike, what was that now, almost over a decade ago?
Yeah,
we lost a lot of series behind the writer strike. Right?
Yep.
They never came back. So yep. I'm wondering, maybe that won't happen the same way because everybody's going through the same thing. But, you know, in a minute, places are going to start running out of content. If nobody can go back into production for however long, everything that's in the can starts coming out. I do know that some, you know, studios have been holding releases back that are already taped. And I also do know that people are quickly adjusting to editing and post-production remotely. So I don't think it's going to be a total.
The Last Dance is a perfect example of that. We weren't supposed to get The Last Dance until June.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they sped this up. Now, if I'm not mistaken, I think they had, you know, 1 and 2 in the can completely. Right. And I think they had to speed up the process, which is why this is a 10-part doc. But most of the people that have seen, that have had access to this, have only gotten up to episode 8. Because, again, they were still in the editing process.
Wasn't even done. Yeah.
They were still in the editing process and finishing up. And listen, I mean, That's a grueling thing. I would assume that if you have particular editors, you know, working on a project, I mean, you can't make them interchangeable, right? Like, it doesn't turn into a 24-hour process where one guy checks out and another guy checks in and punches a clock, and it, you know, yeah. the sensibilities yeah. change
yeah,
with everyone, and now we're you know, we don't have a lot of wiggle room. Right. Yeah. Like, we need to hit this shit out the park, you know. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think what the other thing is that there are a lot of home releases for movies now. I know that people are kind of citing COVID as something that has, you know, driven us to this. But this has been on the table for quite some time. The idea of making movies and having simultaneous releases. There have been some suggestions about this. I mean, mm-hmm. people, it is not, people have better viewing experiences at home now.
No question.
You know, no one's sitting around, you know, watching a fucking, you know, 27-inch Big Mac with bad color.
And a VCR, you know
what I'm saying? VCR, right? Like,
yeah.
So to have a $20 movie or whatever the case might be, like, that totally makes sense. And you're probably going to see more of that. You're going to see more simultaneous releases, you know, yeah, straight to pay-per-view and things like that. So
yeah.
again, sports is going to be interesting. They're talking
sports
about
sports is going to be really interesting.
They're talking about taking the baseball season and putting folks in Arizona and folks in Texas and folks in, I think in Miami, but not Miami, in Tampa or something like that.
Yeah, only playing in like three places, right?
Yeah, only playing in like three places, trying to still give teams their time zones so they're not, you know, jammed up with their routines, mm-hmm. things of that nature, playing in, you know, obviously smaller ballparks with no fans. A big part of baseball's income is a local TV revenue.
Yep.
They have national deals, but they also do local deals, and that's really weird. And that's when the big bucks start coming
in.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, people have obligations. The NBA, they have obligations. They have, you know, and this sort of, you know, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but this sort of ties into what I think Gabrielle Union was talking about in her clip, which is that there's, you know, there's a difference between wealth and celebrity, right? Like there are lots of people that are recognizable and famous, and so there's this assumption that they
got, you know, wild paper.
Like they're literally sitting on a mattress of money that is just, you know, spewing out like Scrooge McDuck or some shit, right? And that's really, it's really kind of like that's not really the case here.
Yeah.
And we've seen artists sort of take a lot of flack for, you know, really asking for a level of humanity and empathy, right? Yeah. Like and not in any specialty way, but just in a regular way, right? Like,
not to cut you off, but just to your point, this week on Love and Hip Hop, they showed a clip for next week because you guys had to cut the season short because of the COVID, and they show a clip of them shutting down the production. And Kirk says, "Yo, so how are we gonna make our money?" And you know, they don't show what the people say back, but he kind of says that because he's taking the whole crew is like, wait, what? Like, we're shutting down? And I've seen people online being like, yeah, what the fuck is Kirk talking about? Let's get a job. I'm like, this is his job.
Right, this is his job.
This is his fucking job. What are you talking about? Like, this is how he makes his money. This is driving everything that they do. So if this stops and, like we're saying, we don't know what this means moving forward. It ain't like it's only shut down for like a week or two.
Right.
Like, we don't know
what. When the entire city is shut down, what are you talking about? Like, it's also that.
And again, this isn't, you know, obviously I know Kirk. I don't know him. You know, we don't have like this incredible friendship like that where we talking about shit. So I'm not speaking on him in particular, but they have other businesses.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Impacted, right? Like, they
have
other
businesses
that are immediately impacted.
Exactly.
Like, the malls are closed. Lounges, restaurants, all that shit is closed.
Exactly.
So your cash flow is greatly impacted.
Exactly. And those other businesses, like I said earlier, are driven by them being on this show.
Being local
celebrities in Atlanta and people who like even Candy, you know, a different kind of money level, but you know, the old lady gang restaurants are driven by Candy and Todd being on Real Housewives of Atlanta,
like,
and people coming to Atlanta to see it. Maybe
it's Atlanta, nigga. There's 1,000 places to get fried chicken and collard greens.
Exactly.
There's no shortage of those places. So
exactly.
You're going for that. And we talked about this even with Justin's. Like, there was nothing spectacular about Justin's food. You go to Harlem and get far better, you know, soul food, but like, you came there for the vibe, the energy, who you might run into.
And maybe you might see Puff, you know what I'm saying?
That's what you're selling.
Exactly.
Right. And all of that shut down. And what I was, you know, kind of bugging out on was that people didn't understand that, you know, even for touring, for acts, for all of those appearances, all of that shit stopped. And when I say stopped, I'm talking about cold turkey.
Like in a day.
So this isn't even about just the artists, but all of the people that work with those people.
Yes.
The road managers, the bodyguards, the all of those people are completely impacted, and they based their next few months off these runs, off these tours. I mean,
because this is high season. Like Frankie Beverly and Maze. They make so much money between May and September, just as you know, or Charlie Wilson. You know how much money Charlie Wilson make between May and September? Like a lot of fucking money, bro.
And so a lot of these, so you would hope that, you know, I think it was Erica that was sort of, you know, saying she was happy about, you know, I guess there was something with Facebook.
Yeah.
And that Facebook now has to, you know, compensate artists for when their music is used of some, mm-hmm. Of some sort. She was, you know, excited about that. And then folks were like coming at her crazy. And I mean, listen, she's definitely said her fair share of shit that you kind of make you raise an eyebrow, make you be like, yo, that's, you know, you're kind of bugging. Mm-hmm. But like in this particular instance, there's no world where you would be arguing for a multi-billion dollar conglomerate to be, you know, shafting artists.
Yeah, to not pay.
To not pay. Like, yeah. like, it's just, again, the assumption and the attack is you have all this money. You are rich and famous. You should be able to do this. And this not like publishing, royalties, licensing. This is their safety net. Absolutely. They are not able to go and file for unemployment. No. They are not able. There's no SSI check for a fucking blues singer. Okay. Yeah. They're writing, they're publishing all of the things that they deposit into the culture. Mm-hmm. Is how they're able to withdraw when it's time to withdraw from it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't shit on people because, you know, I mean, nigga, like, the majority of people, there are businesses out here who didn't have 6 months of money saved up. There are tons of people out here that are hurting. A lot of motherfuckers going to be in repo. A lot of motherfuckers going to be having their boats snatched up.
Yeah.
A lot of motherfuckers going to have liens on their houses.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? A lot of that shit's going to happen.
Yeah. So that's what y'all wanted to mention that. Yeah, that's it. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Hope you guys got educated and had a good time this weekend, this show. Next week, we'll definitely be talking about the Versus battles and Babyface, and I definitely want to talk about the Michelle Obama doc, and hopefully we have a week of some type of peace during the week and stay in the house and not be tripping and, you know, having to go to the mall for nothing. You know what I'm saying? Like
a line at the mall.
To get what? To get what? What was in the mall that you needed to cop that bad? Nothing. So that's it. On that note, we're going to wrap it up and we'll see you all next week.
Peace.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @poplifepodcast.